I want to welcome you to the Retro Rogues Live podcast. This is a segment from last week's live video show. The live show is available every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on Twitch, YouTube, and Twitter. Simply search for BassGod14. That's BASSGOD14 on either YouTube, Twitch, or Twitter. And now, on with the show. On this episode, the Rogues, Eric Alexander, who is the Chief Financial Officer of Bad Bob Productions, and Dave Beatty, a professional comic book artist whose credits include such titles as Batman Incorporated, Justice League of America, and Grifter, were joined by special guest Dr. Hugo Strange. Dr. Strange is head of psychiatry at Arkham Asylum.
So we're going to start off talking about the latest episode of Star Trek Picard. This is episode 4. Tell me, Eric, how did you feel about the episode Absolute Candor? And please feel free to display absolute candor.
Well, what can I say? We try to start out a little bit spoiler free. So, you know, with general impressions. So if any of you out there that are viewing this haven't seen the episode and don't want to be spoiled, we'll give you some general impressions first before we get into sort of the deep dive of the episode. So my overall impression is that it's probably about the same level as episode 3 for me. For me right now, the low point is episode 2. I really hated that episode. But this episode, I think, was more on par with episode 3. There were some things I really didn't like. I'm liking Raffi less and less. Like every time I see her, I just don't like kind of her tone and the way, just kind of just her attitude towards Picard. It seems very dismissive, which seems to be the general attitude of the characters towards Picard in general. It's kind of interesting. It's weird to me because there seems to be this kind of Picard hate fest going on in the world of Star Trek Picard. Everybody seems to have a problem with him. Sometimes for reasons that don't make any sense, they have a problem with him. It's for me as a hardcore Trekkie, it's very, I don't know, it's very off-putting to me. That they keep treating him like garbage. And Raffi in particular, even after they kind of come to some sort of obvious meeting of the mind, she's on the mission. She still kind of treats him like he's like a senile old man, which I guess he will be. I mean, we know he has some sort of senility dementia problem that he's going to be experiencing. We know that from All Good Things. And we know that from the series itself where he met with his doctor from, in a previous Stargazer. Episode, he met with his doctor from the Stargazer, and they reinforced that concept, which I also thought was kind of weird because it's like, we all know that already, but I mean, okay, you know, but that's okay. So, I didn't hate this episode. I'll say that. I didn't hate this episode. I wasn't, you know, thrilled with a lot of the interaction of the characters with Picard. Like I said, Picard just seems to be hated by everybody in the universe at this point. But as far as the story goes, you know, it was okay. You know, we got two new characters in this, one's an old character and we got a new character in this. And I have some interest in both of them. I'm not totally like I don't care. I mean, I'm interested. They introduced some elements in this one that are kind of, that could be fascinating. You know, we can talk about them a little bit more in the deep dive, but my overall impression is I didn't hate it, but I didn't, the attitude towards Picard is very off-putting to me as a hardcore fan. I have a problem with that.
My feelings about the episode was, it was okay. I'm going to say something a bit maybe potentially like something that other people would agree with, put it that way. Maybe a little bit questionable lapse in judgment. There's a few episodes of Star Trek Discovery, and honestly, I liked better than some of these episodes of Picard. You know, this episode was fine. I enjoyed seeing the old school Romulan. We're avoiding spoilers. Just overall impression. It was fine. That's going to be my entire takeaway from this particular episode. I liked it better. I liked it better than the second episode. I would agree with you. The second episode for me is also the lowest point in the show. I did not like the second episode. I like some of the dynamic between some of the characters, the scientist doctor character, the artificial life expert, the synth expert lady. Like, I kind of like her. She's kind of fun and interesting. I like the captain of the ship.
I think it's fair to say with her, though, whether you like it or not, she's kind of like the comic relief of the team.
Yeah. Yeah, she definitely is. I like the captain's there's a lot of things going on with the captain that I like. I like the captain of the ship. I can't remember the name of the ship half the time. This is another episode that I watched once, and I just didn't want to watch it again.
Talking about Rios, right? The captain is Rios.
Yeah, Rios. Pilot. I like Rios. Yeah.
I don't have a problem with Rios, and I do kind of fascinated by what he's done with his emergency holograms and the fact that they're all him.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. I really like that and how they're very different. So the show has some things that I am enjoying. And some things like I did not dislike one of the newer characters that was introduced in this episode. I didn't know how I was going to feel about it, but when I saw what they were doing about it, again, we're avoiding spoilers. I kind of liked some of that. But in terms of the episode as a whole, it's still better than the second episode. I don't think it's better than the first episode. I think I might have liked this one maybe a little bit better than the third episode. So I'd have to say, besides the first episode, this is probably my favorite. But I don't know. The show for me is not bad. It's interesting. But I do agree with you. I am finding some of the attitude towards Picard to be very, very off-putting. And it's hard for me to understand why, you know, everyone who knows who Picard is apparently has an issue with him. It's getting kind of old. You know what I mean? Like,
that's my biggest gripe. Yeah, I'm kind of getting sick of it.
Yeah. This whole the Federation sucks is... You know, I enjoy the show when they're not picking on the Federation. And unfortunately, they pick on the Federation a lot. They find a lot of time to take the Federation out of the shed and hit it with a stick and then push it back into the shed. So I would like for them to be done with that. So that's my official review. It was okay. I liked it. I still don't think any of them is as good as the first. I like the first episode probably the best. I feel like I'm missing like the visions of Brent Spiner.
Yeah. No, I agree with you.
I wish we get more visions of Brent Spiner. So like,
yeah. Why not? Why not?
Yeah. So that's kind of my thing.
Yeah. It's kind of like, you know, yeah, I agree with you in terms of ranking of the episodes. I do think episode one is the best episode so far. It's the best episode I've seen. That first scene is my favorite scene so far in Picard. The scene of Data and Picard sitting together, playing cards on the Enterprise D. I really enjoyed that. And even though there were some issues I had with the episode, so far it's really my favorite episode of Star Trek Picard. So I would agree with you in terms of kind of ranking the episodes. One is the best so far. Two is really the low point of the series so far, and you know, four is better than two at least.
Yeah, I would have to say, like I said, for me, I liked this one probably about the best. I enjoyed the action that was in it. But again, we're trying to avoid spoilers, so I can't talk too much more about it because I'm already fighting the urge to kind of spoil something as it currently sits. Is that good for Picard?
Well, we're going to get the spoilers, right?
Deep breath. Okay, spoiler. All right, spoiler time. Okay. All right. So now we're going to talk spoilers for Star Trek Picard. So if you haven't seen the episode, if you don't want to know any spoilers, now is the time to look away or go get something to drink for a couple minutes and come right back. Because we have a great show planned tonight. So we're getting Picard kind of taken care of here on the front end. And then we're going to get into our other topics. I don't want to spend too much more time on that because I'm already talking to death. So let's see, spoilers.
Should we introduce our special guest? It looks like he's ready to go.
Yes.
Go ahead and introduce him.
Let's do that. I want to welcome to the show. This is Professor Hugo Strange. He is coming to us from some undisclosed location deep in the bowels of Arkham Asylum. I want to welcome you to the show, Professor, or Dr. Hugo Strange, my bad.
It's Doctor.
Yes, sorry about that. So Dr. Hugo Strange is here with us. We're going to be discussing the enigmatic Clown Prince of Crime later in the episode, also known as the Joker. And Dr. Hugo Strange has been gracious enough to come on the show, and he is going to help us discuss. He's one of your former patients. Is that correct, Doctor?
Yes, he's one of my former patients, unfortunately.
All right. Very cool. We appreciate you and glad to have you here on the show. So we're going to finish talking about Picard here, Dr. Strange, if that's okay.
That's fine. You can speak about him. All he's doing is clamoring to get back on a ship.
All right. Well, there you go. Spoilers for Picard. Do you mind if I go first, Eric?
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I love what they're doing with Rios with the different holograms, just the different, and I really like that actor. For me, he is probably the standout on the show so far. I hope that his tragic Starfleet background isn't something that really makes me cringe, because right now I really like his character. The new character, I think, was it Elnor? The Romulan elfin guy. I like the fact that they're echoing back to Dune and the idea of I can't remember what it's called. Because there's the Order of the Sisterhood in Dune, and it seems like they're echoing back to that. That stuff's kind of interesting. I liked his character just fine. I like the doctor, the female scientist character. She's interesting. The synth expert is really kind of, I'm enjoying her character. I could take or leave Raffi at this point. It's really getting on my nerves, kind of like what you were saying earlier. I love the introduction of the Romulan Warbird, the old style Romulan Warbird, and I really like that battle sequence. I thought that was kind of fun, where you see Rios flying the ship. Rios, for me, is the character that's standing out to me. I really like Rios. In terms of what was revealed in the episode, we didn't really get a whole lot revealed. Just Picard went to the planet. He picked up this essentially Romulan warrior, nun, assassin character. And then they battled the bird of prey. I found the battle sequence to be fun. And then, of course, the big twist at the end, 7 of 9 is on the ship. They do mention the Fenris Rangers. And then eventually she shows up later in the episode and actually helps them actually take out the prey. All that stuff was fun. And like I said, I like this. This is probably one of the better episodes to me. First episode's still the best. And that's all my thoughts. I like Rios. I enjoy the action sequence. The new characters are kind of interesting. I like the fact they're harkening back to Dune. That's all I got. What about you, Eric?
All right, well, let's start at the beginning. So the sort of, I guess, interesting reveal, if you could call it, that we start out with is we find out where Picard was when the Utopian Planitia starship yards, the dockyards, the where they were building the ships. We find out where Picard was when the attack happened. And apparently he was at a planet where they were already resettling Romulans.
Right.
The supernova hadn't occurred yet. They were in the process. Picard was still an admiral, although for some reason he shows up in civilian clothes, which I didn't quite understand that. That whole look was a little weird to me.
Very Panama Jack.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah, I thought that was a little weird. It's like, okay, he's still in Starfleet. Why can't we just see him in his uniform at least one more time? You know what I mean? So that irritated me a little bit. But anyway, he goes down to the planet. We establish this relationship with these Romulan warrior nuns we've never heard about before, but apparently have been around forever. And they're the bestest warriors in the universe. That's from Kurtzman, by the way, because that's what Kurtzman said in the Ready Room. Is he actually said they're the best in the universe, which is okay. Yeah, whatever. All right. Because obviously Kurtzman made them, so they have to be the best, right? Obviously, that was probably his contribution to the episode. That kind of stuff annoys me. I don't think you have to make your show better by dismissing previous incarnations and previous shows and say, oh, I came up with this idea. They're the best. They're better than the Klingons, better than the Jem'Hadar, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
It's not necessary. It's not necessary. Oh, Bobby's back. He said, the hat killed me.
Yeah. Like I said, very Panama Jack.
Well, I just don't see why we couldn't see him in uniform one last time, because I don't think we're ever going to see him in uniform again. I think what we got in episode 2, which is my least favorite episode, that's all we're going to get of Picard in the new uniform, you know, in the new, which I thought was really cool looking. I actually liked the Admiral uniform that he had. So anyway, he's on the planet. We established this relationship with these warrior nuns, and the fact that apparently they have sort of adopted this Romulan orphan. We assume he's an orphan. They don't specifically state that, but obviously that's what it sounds like. And it's kind of a weird situation because it's an all-female group, but they're taking care of this boy. And it's under the premise that Picard is eventually going to get him resettled somewhere else. You know, that's kind of the premise, that this is a temporary thing. Well, of course, what happens, you know, right off the bat, Picard realizes that the shipyards have been destroyed. He needs to get back to work. He needs to leave. And apparently that's it. He never comes back, which I was like, why would Picard do that? Why wouldn't he at least come back to explain the situation, even if he wasn't in Starfleet? You know, it's a weird thing that he just dropped everything and didn't come back and at least tell them what was going on. Apparently he never came back. That was the last time he saw this character that I have on the screen, the Romulan boy, which I can't remember his name.
Elnor. Isn't it Elnor? I think it's Elnor.
I get him confused with the Lord of the Rings character. So
it's not Elrond.
So I want to say Elrond. I always want to say Elrond because he looks exactly like Elrond. So anyway,
it's Elnor.
We find out that apparently the relationship between the two was strong. This boy really liked Picard. Picard was teaching him about fencing and the Three Musketeers and things like that. And there was sort of a father-son relationship developing, but Picard just threw that all away when he decided to leave Starfleet. And he never came back to even check on these people or explain his actions or anything. So now we advance to the current time frame, and Picard has decided he needs to go back to this planet because he thinks those warrior nuns can help him, which makes sense. He needs some muscle. Supposedly these warrior nuns are the best fighters in the universe. Again, that's from Kurtzman. So he's going over to them.
The Space League of Assassins? That's what you're telling me?
Space Assassins?
I haven't seen this yet.
Yes, Dr. Strange, they're sort of like the League of Assassins in space.
That's a good way to put it, right? Yeah, they're like the League of Assassins.
League of Assassins in space.
There you go. That's a good way to explain them. So,
but there's no Ra's al Ghul, there's no Merlin, but there are. I don't know what you want to call them. Elves. There are elves. They're elves afoot.
They're elves. Yeah, exactly. Well,
it always sounds to me like you already have a Wayne and a Robin. Picard and the boy.
That's true. It's a good observation.
That is a good observation. That is a good observation. So apparently Picard goes to this planet wanting to enlist the help of these warrior nuns, get one of them to help him. But apparently the way they operate is you have to basically tell them your quest. And they actually use the word quests, which was a little bit cringe to me because there's a lot of Lord of the Rings references going on here. And it's like, okay, guys, I get it. You know what I mean? So just stop, please. But he explains that he has to, the way that these nuns operate, you don't hire them with money or barter or anything. They basically, you have to tell them your story and then they decide whether you're worthy of their assistance or not. So that's basically what's bringing Picard to this planet. That's what he's trying to do. So meanwhile, of course, we still have the Borg cube, which I don't think you touched on that at all, Dave, which is we have the what's going on the Borg cube. And we're kind of finding out, I guess, a little bit more about what the Super Tal Shiar mission is on the Borg cube.
Yes, so, the Super Tal Shiar.
Yeah, the Super Tal Shiar. I have to say, there were some really cringeworthy scenes on that Borg cube. The scene where they were doing the sock thing and running around the Borg cube, like, you know, these, I mean, that was bad. I mean, that was just bad, you know, where they're running around with, you know, using their socks to slide across the room, you know, to show how in love they are, I guess. I don't know what that scene was.
That whole scene was awful. I mean, they've got the dramatic music swells. We're supposed to kick. Because at first he's talking about like a Borg initiation, and he's taking her into the ship, and I was like, "Is there like what is he going to show her?" And then when they do this, I'm like, "Okay, this is stupid. This is stupid."
Well, the second he said Borg initiation, I knew that or ritual or whatever he said, I was like, "Okay, whatever's going to happen is going to be really stupid. They're either going to actually show the Borg doing something completely stupid that they apparently we never knew." But then what we got was, no, he's just fooling around with her and he does this stupid thing. And, you know, they're so in love. You know what I mean? I guess is what that scene was supposed to, even though they met, like yesterday? Of course, they're already sleeping together and all that stuff. So, you know, whatever, you know?
Yeah, so, it was bad. It was bad. I get it. You're trying to show us that they're falling in love or whatever. But I didn't buy it.
I didn't buy it at all. So anyway, the other thing that we find out is we do
sounds
get
like
the,
I need to put them in here.
I'm sorry, say that again, Doctor.
So it sounds like I need to put them in here and admit them.
Yeah. they could probably use some psychiatric, well, some psychoanalysis at least, I'd say.
Well, that's kind of what's supposed to be going on, right? I mean, because they have all these crazy Romulans that were apparently their assimilation was botched somehow, which we don't find out. We still don't know why. That's what Soji's trying to do is he's trying to find out why these Romulans went insane when they were assimilated instead of actually got assimilated. Apparently they're like in between. And so they were never properly assimilated into the Borg collective. And now they're all just crazy. Unlike the other Borg, where they're able to just take the Borg parts out and they're a person again, you know, like you. Something's wrong with the Romulans. And these were the last people that were actually assimilated by this particular cube, because obviously this cube fell into Romulan hands. The last contact the Borg cube had when it was functioning was with the Romulan scout vessel. And that's where all these crazy Romulans. So she's trying to figure that out. But in the midst of all this, we get to see that the undercover operative, the sister of our Super Tal Shiar, and she's also a Super Tal Shiar or whatever. And man, that's some pretty cringe worthy like incest stuff going on there, don't you think? With the two of them,
that's pretty weird.
It's very weird. You talk about psychoanalyzing that. Apparently, the two of them are like, it looks like they're lovers. You know, the brother it's and weird. Sister, the super Tal Shiar. I don't know why that's in there. I don't know if that's going to become relevant later, but it's weird. It's
their last name Lannister.
That might be why they did that. That, you know, I really think, because we're talking about Dune references, we're talking about Lord of the Ring references. You know, I could buy that's basically just a ripoff from Game of Thrones. You know, because they want to throw all this edgy stuff into it because incest is so hip now. You know what I mean? Because of Game of Thrones. You know.
That's an interesting way to put that. Incest is hip now.
Oh, why is it there? I'm like,
I don't know.
Why is that there? Why even go there? You know, in Star Trek. You know what I mean? Come on, that's not Trek. You know, that's like Game of Thrones. You know what I mean? So
right, right.
So that stuff is very, really weird. I will say I am interested in this idea of what did happen to these Romulans. What did the assimilation go bad somehow? Was it deliberate? Were they actually wanted to be assimilated? Maybe they were trying to put like a virus on the cube to disable it, but that went wrong too. You know what I mean? So I am curious about that particular story. But I'll be honest.
Can I throw this out there? Because you know we've talked about some of my crazy outlandish theories. This is what I thought they had an issue with Picard. I thought it was going to be revealed at some point that they still did manage to evacuate a large percentage of the Romulan people, but that the only person that Picard could go to that could help facilitate this was going to essentially be the Borg. There was going to be some kind of understanding, some kind of truce, some kind of agreement. And that was going to be why we had a Borg cube and the Romulans were on it. And there was some sort of like, you know, like I thought somehow that was going to be like a thing. So as we get further into Picard and it turns out that he just quit and whatever happened.
Right.
I kept waiting for there to be some kind of reveal that the Romulans appealed to the Borg, you know, and that's why they have this co-op station. Now, of course, I know that somehow they got possession of it and they're using it for whatever, scientific research, and they're selling off the parts of the Borgs and stuff. I mean, I get all that. They've shown us that. But I kept thinking that somehow there was going to be a connection that because I thought that was going to better explain why the Borg was integrated into the show to the level that they are, that somehow they had something to do with the evacuation. Because if you want to recast characters in a different light, I don't know. It's a crazy theory.
What I thought, honestly, was just that this is the aftermath of what Janeway did to the Collective, and that the cubes are all disabled. That's what I thought. That's not true, by the way. I think Shaban actually said, no, there are still Borg that are Borg and running around assimilating people. Just this particular cube is disabled, and we'll find out why later. We have a comment from the chat going back to our discussion of the Super Tal Shiar, which Katie is correcting me because it's the Zot Vash. All right,
yeah, there you go.
The Super Tal Shiar. So she says maybe the Zot Vash consider themselves to be brothers and sisters, quote unquote. In other words, they're brothers and sisters in the Zot Vash. That's possible. I mean, I would hope so. You know what I mean? If that's the case, I'm okay with that. If that's the case, that they just all are call each other brothers and sisters because they take some sort of oath, the way that you do in the military, the way they do in a police department, they'll say brothers and sisters and stuff like that. In that context, I'm okay with it. That's not what we're being presented with, Katie. I just want to put that out there, that's not how it's being framed. It's being framed very creepy that this is not okay. That's actually the way it's being framed. But she also goes on to say, if not, it reminded me of the Bor. I'm going to butcher this. The Borgias, the Borgias,
the Borgias.
There we go. So we've got someone educated in the panel today. So
yes, thank you.
And I'm going to butcher those two names too. Is it Lucretia and Cesare? Those two characters, which I do know a little bit about that. I mean, obviously, that, you know, when it comes to royals and things like that, there is a lot of history of incest and things like that. And that's what Game of Thrones was going off of. Game of Thrones right. was incorporating that whole royals do this. You know, Romans did it. You know what I mean? They keep the bloodlines pure. But this context, it just seems weird. You know, I hope Katie's theory is correct. And they just call everybody calls each other brother and sister. But that's not the way this is being framed. I just want to point that out too.
Interesting.
I want to thank
the people who participated in the chat. Are we good with Picard now? Because I don't know if I want to throw a promo thing in Picard, the Picard
club. Well, I do have more to say about Picard.
Go right ahead.
Because we have to get into it ends on a high note. So the episode actually ends on a good note. So
it was great to see Seven finally.
Yeah, we got to see Seven. But leading up to that was pretty interesting, I thought. So what we're presented with is apparently there are some sort of pirates that exist in this quadrant of space. It's not part of the Federation, it doesn't sound like. It's like it could be in the neutral zone. You know, I would think there wouldn't really be a neutral zone anymore because the Romulan Empire is kind of falling apart. So we don't know exactly where this place is, where Picard is going to get the assistance of the nuns. And so what ends up happening, of course, is instead of getting one of the nuns to help him, he gets the boy to help him because the boy doesn't belong there anyway, but they've trained him, which is kind of cool. Right. So even though traditionally these are all women, these are women warriors, this is like the one exception. The little boy is now one of them, essentially, but not because he can never be one of them because he's a male. And I do right. get that. That I thought was kind of cool. It put him like in this kind of interesting situation where he's almost tailor-made to help Picard, you know?
And so, depending upon how they want to frame his story, it gives us an interesting way to explore the idea of identity and how much your identity is sort of wrapped up, quote unquote, in your gender. So there is some interesting ideas to explore there.
I thought there were some interesting ideas there because, again, even though he essentially is one of them, he's good enough to be one of them, but he can't be one of them because he's a guy. So I thought was interesting. Yep. You know what I mean? He just can't. He'll never be accepted by them because he's a guy. So Picard tells him his situation, what's been going on. And at first he's still angry at Picard. The reason that this episode is called Absolute Candor is because this particular order, they are the opposite of Romulans, because Romulans are all about secrets and deception. And these particular Romulans always tell you what's on the forefront of their mind. They just spit it out. So they have absolute candor. They don't have a filter. They don't filter what they say, which is also kind of neat. It's kind of shows why these particular Romulans wouldn't get along with the other Romulans. You know, they don't act like anybody else in Romulan society, because Romulan society is all based on secrets and lies. That's what Romulan society is. That's why we have the Tal Shiar and the Super Tal Shiar, otherwise known as the Zavash. Okay. So that's the basis, the cornerstone of their society. So it is kind of neat to see that. Yeah. I mean, you're going to have people that are different. You know, we've seen that they have people that are different. We had the people that were the part of for unification, Spock's people, Spock's movement. We know there's dissidents in Romulan society. So I like that. I thought that was kind of cool. And then eventually what happens is, even though at first the male character doesn't want to help Picard, what ends up happening is Picard goes and picks a fight, which I thought was kind of weird. So
I did think that was a little strange when he walked over and he threw the sign down. And
because apparently what's happening
that's
is
very because he part of the tenor of the show is the reason he left Starfleet is because Starfleet was no longer Starfleet.
Right.
Well, going over there and throwing that sign down and walking in somewhere he's obviously not welcome, that's not very prime directive. I mean, now he's not interfering with their society in a major way, but that kind of goes against the tenets of what Starfleet believed. Like, I mean, I understand it's not socially acceptable to discriminate against people, you know, but I just thought that was, it, to me, it seems slightly out of character for Picard.
It's not Trek. That's the problem. It's a construct that works in our world, and we understand it in the context of our world, and that essentially this is Jim Crow. I mean, this is segregation that's going on this Romulan planet because they feel abandoned. I mean, that's really right. What comes out of it too, is because they feel that the Federation betrayed them. And it sounds right. Like they have good reason to think that. Okay. So they don't want to interact with humans. They don't want to interact with other worlds. There was a mention that there's sort of like this movement going on that particular colony. And I can't remember what they called it. It was like the New Romulan Movement or something like that. I can't remember what the term was, but they threw that out there that apparently there are Romulan survivors who are starting to like feel like, hey, we need to just stay away from other races now and be isolationists and all that kind of stuff. So it's going both ways, interestingly enough. So you've got the Federation's becoming, quote unquote, more isolationist. And apparently some of the Romulans feel exactly the same way. They don't want anything to do with off-worlders or non-Romulans either. So Picard, of course, doesn't like this. So he goes into this tavern that clearly says Romulans only, takes the sign down and sits down as if that's going to be okay and nobody's going to make an issue of it. And of course, what ends up happening is they decide that they're going to challenge him to a fight and basically kill him because he's an old man. But Picard refuses to fight. So Picard refuses to fight. And what happens is the Romulan, I cannot stop thinking of the Lord of the Rings elf character, and I keep screwing his name up. It's Elnor, right? Elnor.
We've got another comment from Katie. Yeah, I think it's Elnor. But there you go,
Romulan. Good catch, Rebirth. Katie. Yeah, the Romulan Katie. Rebirth movement. That's what it was. Katie's got it. The Romulan Rebirth movement, which I thought was interesting. I do think that's kind of interesting and makes sense that the Romulans would feel that way because they feel abandoned and they don't really want anything to do with the Federation or other aliens in general. They just don't want anything to do with them. I get that. That makes sense to me. But Picard kind of picking this fight, it's too contemporary. It's not really Trek. It's something maybe we would do. You know what I mean? As a contemporary American or whatever. But it's not something that really makes a whole lot of sense in the context of Trek. And he should know he's going to cause trouble. And then he's not willing to face the consequence of that. He's like, no, I'm not going to fight you. You know what I mean? Well, you picked a fight, Picard. You know, what did you expect was going to happen? So he refuses to fight, but the other character comes in.
It's Elnor.
Elnor comes in. And he rescues Picard and kills everybody, kills the guy that was going to fight Picard, chops his head off.
Yeah, cuts his head right off.
And so now we know he's a badass. Okay, we obviously know he's a badass. I do think it's weird that he runs around with a sword. They kind of even joke in the show, because did you notice that? The one guy's like, okay, yeah, screw this. Let's see you dodge disruptor fire. And then they beamed him out. It was almost like the Indiana Jones moment. You know what I mean?
Here's the thing that's interesting, yet kind of slightly odd, I found about all that. Okay. They're doing a lot of stuff with, Alexandre Dumas, Three Musketeers. Okay. And it reminded me of Musketeers in an extent, like the way some of the Romulans were outfitted, but they had pistols and swords. You know, like you could have seen a Musketeer, you know, of course, having a saber or something, or and having a, I forget what the second blade. Our expert might know more about this than me at this current stage in my life. I know more about the Japanese versions, but you know, having a long sword, having a smaller sword for parrying, you know, and then maybe having a flintlock pistol, right?
Right, musketeers.
And I kept seeing that, and I was like, oh, okay, I get it. But at the same point too, I thought it was weird. We've never seen Romulans running around with swords before.
No,
we haven't had swords being an important part of Romulan culture. That's a Klingon thing, you know, with the what is it? I forget what the double bladed, the sword of Kalis and all that, you know, like that to me,
the Klingon Batleth.
I thought it was, we've never seen that associated. Now we haven't spent a lot of time exploring Romulan culture. So, and the history, maybe that's always been there, but I just personally, I just thought it was weird because it just felt like a Klingon thing. It's like all of a sudden we're taking a Klingon thing and we're going to give it to the Romulans.
So yeah, but they did play around with it because I thought it was funny because at the end of that sequence, one of the other guys is like, well, screw this sword stuff. I'm just going to shoot you. And then they get beamed up. It was It was almost going to be an Indiana Jones moment, you know, with the swordsmith, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
Like, okay, screw this. I'm just going to shoot him, you know, which is why we don't use swords anymore, even now. And we're nowhere near Star Trek. You know what I mean? Swords are not an effective weapon, folks, in terms of actual, you know, combat in this time period, if your opponent has a gun. So, you know, that they're just not. They're also too conspicuous.
I know if you disagree.
Well, if your opponent has a gun, they're not effective because they're too conspicuous. And anybody with a gun is just going to shoot you. Okay. A knife, it makes a little bit more sense because you can conceal a knife. You can get close to somebody without them knowing that you have a knife, and they're still effective weapons. But in terms of actual real life combat, we haven't used swords in combat for a long time, a very long time. And it just seems odd to me that's what they use. You know, this order hasn't apparently adapted to the technology of the times because he doesn't carry a disruptor, which I thought is really weird. You'd think he'd at least have a disruptor, even if he is into the sword thing, you know?
Dr. Strange, on the streets of Gotham, have you noticed that swords are used almost equally with firearms, or is the firearm the primary weapon in Gotham?
Firearms definitely the primary weapon in Gotham. If a person walks out with a sword, they better know how to use it.
Ah,
or they're going to be dropped really fast. Slade? I mean, it's Slade, come on.
You're talking about the Deathstroke, the Terminator, for maybe our viewers who are not terribly familiar with a lot of the personalities you have running around in Gotham. Are you referring to Deathstroke, Dr. Strange?
Yes, I'm referring to Deathstroke, the Terminator.
Ah, cool. Thank you, sir.
But then again, he does have superhuman reflexes, so guns really are not effective against him. Yeah.
Interesting.
So it's a little different in Picard as far as all that goes. In fact, even Raffi makes fun of him. Good. Remember, Raffi makes fun of him and says, oh, you brought a boy with a stick. She said that. You brought a boy with a stick.
I'm just trying to tune Raffi out. Whenever Raffi's talking, I'm looking at my phone. I really don't like that character. I really don't. I hope she grows on me.
She's pretty nasty, honestly. She's pretty mean to pretty much everybody, you know? So other than Rios, apparently she has a relationship with Rios. But she said something, you know, messed up about the scientist lady. First thing she says to Raffi is something insulting. That's apparently she meets someone and she just insults them. You know, that's apparently what future humans do now. That's not very
well. That's what her character does.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't like her character. So.
So now this does get us to
from Gotham.
No,
she may be. We don't know that. She could be from Gotham. That's true. She could
that's
be.
True.
We don't know. She could
would
be from
Gotham. Would explain a lot. The attitude. It would explain a drug lot. Use problem. The violence. It would explain
in fact,
a lot.
It would make it might turn out that she spent some time in Arkham Asylum. We're going to find that out later. That is possible. They haven't said no. It's possible. We're going to find out that she actually did spend some time in Arkham Asylum. We do have a comment. So Raffi is one note and it's getting old. And you are right, Bobby. I agree with you 100%. She is one note and it's getting old. She insults everybody. And it's like this, you know, again, it's like, this isn't your dad's Trek. You know what I mean? This isn't your dad's Trek. You know, that's kind of what the response I think is. It's like, yeah, well, okay. Obviously it's not. I get that.
We all got the message. Thank you very much.
I got it loud and clear. You know, this is not my dad's Trek. Which is really sad because my dad introduced me to Trek, but whatever, you know? But we do get on the ship. We get back on the ship and we have an attack in space. We have a space battle. You know, we actually have a space battle.
My favorite scene in this episode. I really enjoyed this whole thing with Rios, and he's got another hologram that was he called up. It's like his whole crew is hologram versions of himself.
Yeah, exactly.
And they have and he's very just sort of like leaning on the console and just unamused. And Rios is my favorite character. I like that whole bit. That was a lot of fun. And where they're flying around and you see the inertia on the ship, you know, it just, I loved all that. That was a lot of fun. And go ahead.
Did you watch The Ready Room? Because he was the actor featured on The Ready Room.
No, I didn't. I after the last one, I was just like, I don't know if I want to watch
this. Well, you like Rios, so you're going to like that episode because that's
okay. I'll check it out.
And he talks about that whole aspect, which I do kind of find fascinating. This idea, because at first you think he doesn't have a crew. It's just him.
Right.
It's like, no, he has a crew. They're just all holograms of himself and different versions of himself. Yeah. So he has a crew. They're just all holograms. So I think that's kind of a neat idea. I like it. I know he loves it because he talked about in the interview that he gets to play all these different versions different versions of this character, you know, different accents, different looks. Yeah. So as an actor, I love it.
I love that whole thing they're doing with him and the holograms on the ship. That stuff, that stuff's a winner. I loved every minute of all that. I like even the previous episode, we had the one who he's like the holodeck concierge type character. Like all that stuff is really fun for me. I've enjoyed everything with him. So.
Oh, this is, yeah, I know this reference, Bobby. Yeah. Reminds me of Herman's head. It does remind me a little bit of Herman's head.
Yeah.
It actually does.
It's cool.
It reminds me more of Booster Gold.
Booster Gold.
Oh, okay.
But I like that aspect. I think it's interesting. The only thing I don't like is that he's a little like dismissive and kind of rude to the holograms, which, you know, again, is not very Trek. But, you know, it is what it is. It's still fun. I know it's got to be fun for him. So it's got to be a dream job for him because he gets to play so many different characters on the show, essentially. So that's neat. And it makes sense. It does make sense, you know, in Star Trek that people would do that, you know, that they would have ships and instead of having to deal with an alien or human crew, that they would just make a bunch of holograms. Why not? They can do that. We've seen that before, that holograms can do these kinds of things. So that's kind of cool. I did like that. And the entire sequence as far as the space combat was pretty cool. Obviously we have, you know, the Picard ship, you know, they're fighting with this Romulan ship that apparently has been taken over by pirates, and a mysterious ship appears to help them. And earlier in the episode, early in the episode, Picard had specifically stated that this planet was supposed to be under the protection of the Fenris Rangers. But apparently they pulled out. But apparently they didn't all pull out. So this ship appears. We don't know who's in it at first. The ship assists them. But in doing so, that ship is destroyed. So they beam the pilot aboard. And it is 7 of 9, which is obviously the high point of the episode. Fans are totally excited about this. You know, that Seven's finally on the show. She's on the ship. Which is kind of cool. We know from other information that she is one of the Fenris Rangers. So I'm guessing she was responding to this battle, you know, that kind of a thing. We'll find out later. That's one thing. We don't really find out anything about Seven other than she was in this ship and apparently decided to assist Picard's ship against these known pirates. So it's cool to have her back. I know this is something that fans have been waiting for. It took us 4 episodes to get there and we only get a little snippet, but at least she's on board. And that's definitely a high note of this episode. It ends on a high note.
Yeah, that was, that whole ending sequence. I enjoyed all of it and it was a lot of fun to see Seven. And I hope that she's going to be like part of the crew for a little while, at least. I mean, I'd love for her to be a regular.
My biggest concern about the legacy characters is they're just cameos. And we kind of have already seen that with Brent Spiner. Data's relevant. I mean, he is relevant to the story, but I don't think we're going to see any more Data. I think that's it. And I really wanted him to be more involved. And
I
don't want the legacy characters to just be glorified cameos. you know? Right. So I hope she's part of the crew now. That's my hope, is she's part of the crew and she's going to be going, she's going to be with them going forward for the next six episodes. We only have six episodes left. That's it.
Yep. Yep.
We're almost halfway through this already.
Reminds me of Crisis. It was full of legacy cameos.
Yes, that's true.
All I did was just all I did was just put people in there to die.
Yeah,
that's true.
Exactly, exactly. So I don't want that. I don't want to see Seven die in the next episode in the first scene. Okay, if they do something like that, they're gonna alienate a ton of the fan base. You know, so.
There's a lot of people tuning in for Seven, so
absolutely.
I hope they have enough sense not to do something that's stupid.
So, I mean, Twitter was going insane. You know,
yeah,
Twitter was going insane with people reacting to Seven finally being on the show, because it took a while. End of the fourth episode, we only see her for like 5 seconds. So, Hopefully they do her character justice and she'll do some cool things and contribute to the next episode. We know what's going to the next episode. Apparently we're going to another planet to find Maddox. So we'll see. Apparently we may find Maddox in episode 5. That's the next mission. That's what they're all going to be doing now. So we'll see how that goes.
It'll be interesting. I actually, it's not your dad's Trek. I actually rewatched, some original series episodes, and I actually watched a couple of Next Gen episodes. I had them on while I was doing different things. And one of the episodes I rewatched was Brothers, because I'm really hoping that your theory that somehow lore is behind all this, like it'd be really interesting if they think they're going to go find Bruce Maddox and Bruce Maddox isn't who they find.
Yeah.
That would be kind of fun. And that would be definitely a different, interesting way to incorporate Brent Spiner in the show a little bit longer.
And I
think that would be interesting.
Yeah, I think it'd be very interesting. I think Spiner would like to do it too, because I think he liked playing lore a lot. And you know, it'd be kind of interesting too. As I thought about this, I'm not saying this is my theory. I'm just saying it would be cool if they did this, because the synths are actually biological, except for the positronic brain. It would be kind of neat if lore had done that, and so now he's aged. And then you don't even have to worry about that. You know what I mean? Because now he's a biological with he just has the positronic brain, you know?
Yeah.
That would be kind of neat. And then you could even get rid of the makeup if you wanted. You know what I mean? It could just be like, no, this is how I look now. You know what I mean? Because I'm a biological now. You know what I mean? So, but I don't think they're going to do that. I mean, I think it would be so cool if they did, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah.
From all of the discussions earlier, it sounds like if anything's going to be cool, it's not going to happen.
That's one way to look at it. The way to look at it, Doctor.
That's kind of the way it's been so far. Again, I'm hoping Seven is kick-ass and fun, and you know, we'll see how her story plays out. So that's definitely what a lot of fans are hoping for. So we'll see. Yeah.
Is that good for Picard?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, cool. All right. So we're going to move on to our next segment. But before we do that, I want to just real quickly, we kind of started, we changed the format up a little bit in this episode, but I remind everyone, I want to thank everyone who's participating in the comments and, you know, the kind of the ongoing chat that we have going on in the comments. We are continuing our art drawing. Everyone who comments is entered into a drawing to win an original sketch card. The one for this episode is themed according to our main topic, which we'll be covering a little bit later. It's the topic that Dr. Hugo Strange is here primarily to discuss. And that, of course, is the Joker. So everyone who comments on this episode, this is an original Batman, the Legend, sketch card done by me. This is a Cryptozoic. This is an official one. You can tell by the little hollow foil thing there on the corner. But this is a one of one, and this is of the Joker, which will be the main topic of today's episode. Thanks to everyone who's commented. The contest also for the original art in conjunction with our survey, as is officially ended at this point. Also, too, I want to mention the card for the comments is USA shipping only, just because it makes my life a little bit easier. There we go. So just USA only, and you need to be at least over the age of 18. But enough about that. But the other contest that we had going, I'll reach over here and grab it real quick, for the survey to win this. I want to thank everyone who participated in our survey. I'm going to be compiling them and putting them all together. And I'll be doing a drawing probably a little bit later this week. And we will announce the winner on next week's show. I want to thank everyone who participated. We're going to use that information to help hopefully create a better show. And as you notice, by us changing up the format, we're always looking at new ways to improve what we're doing here on Retro Rogues Live. So that's enough housekeeping. For now, I will remind everyone about the sketch card contest for commenting during the show as we move on, because I want to continue to encourage people who might be watching. Please join into the comment. Be part of the conversation about what we're talking about. That's what makes the show fun and entertaining for everyone. So we're going to move on pop culture news. I don't have a lot for pop culture news this week. We do have some important stories that we need to talk about. Eric, do you want to go first or you want me to go first?
You can go first if you want.
Okay, cool. Let me pull this up on my screen here real quick. Wow. So many little pop-ups.
Yeah, I know.
They're just getting kind of nuts.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is coming from Deadline. We do have one more. I know everyone's like going, well, wait a minute, David, are you not going to talk about that other thing? I know everyone wants to hear my reaction. We're going to get to that here in just a minute. This is going to be my main one, though, for this episode. This comes from Deadline. Some people may or may not be aware of, but Kevin Smith is working on a sort of animated He-Man Master Universe show for Netflix. It is going to be... it's called Revelation, and I think it's somehow supposed to tie into the original one, the original Filmation one. I'm not quite clear on that yet. I haven't been following it too closely, but they did actually announce the voice cast. So this is, again, this is a brand new, Kevin Smith is serving as executive producer. He's probably obviously writing on it as well, probably directing several episodes. Masters Universe, Revelation, Netflix anime series, or actually animated series. And they've announced some of the cast. As you can see here, Mark Hamill, Lena Headey, Chris Wood, Sarah Michelle Gellar, and among others. We're going to scroll down and see if we can find, this is the full list. I'm going to run through this list pretty quick, because those of you that are genre fans are going to find this interesting. So Mark Hamill's going to be Skeletor, everybody, if you haven't heard that yet. Yeah,
I didn't know
Mark
that. Hamill's gonna, I did not know that. That's cool.
Lena Headey, which I say Game of Thrones, I primarily think of her from 300. Of course, she was also in the Sarah Connor Chronicles as Sarah Connor. It's going to be Evelyn. Chris.
Oh, really?
Yep.
That's going to be just like Cersei from Game of Thrones. Very similar characters in a lot of ways, and attitude and all that stuff.
Chris Wood will be
playing Lannister business.
Yeah. Chris Wood will be Prince Adam, He-Man. Sarah Michelle Gellar is going to be Teela.
Really?
Liam Cunningham is going to do Man at Arms. Stephen Root is going to be Cringer. One of my favorite voice actors, Diedrich Bader. Some people may know Diedrich Bader was actually Batman and one of the later animated shows, which I quite enjoyed, Brave and the Bold. I have an interesting story about Diedrich Bader, but I don't want to take up too much time with that. But Diedrich Bader is going to be King Randor and Trapjaw. Griffith Newman is going to be Orko. Tiffany Smith is going to be Andra. Henry Rollins, of all people, is going to be Triclops.
Oh, wow.
Alan Oppenheimer, the original Skeletor, is going to be Mossman. Susan Eisenberg, who is the voice of Wonder Woman on the Justice League, is going to be the Sorceress. Alicia Silverstone is going to be Queen Marlena.
Alicia Silverstone's back?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Justin Long will be Roboto. Jason Mewes will be Stinkor. Phil Lamar will be Hero, which those of you are really familiar with Masters, you know who that is. Tony Todd, Candyman himself, is going to be Scareglow. Cree Summer is going to be playing the Priestess. Kevin Michael Richardson, for the purposes of this show, who's actually one of the voice actors who did the Joker, is going to be Beastman. And one of the big ones, Kevin Conroy, that's right, Batman from Batman the Animated Series, is going to be Merman. So that'll be interesting. So Merman fans, you leveled up. You got Kevin Conroy. And Harley Quinn Smith, which is Kevin Smith's daughter, will actually be playing Eileena. So there's your main cast for He-Man Revelation. I feel like the voice cast in itself is a revelation. I'm very excited for this. I'm a Kevin Smith fan. I don't know if they have the art here in the Deadline article, but I saw it kind of bouncing about. I don't see it. The preview art they released for it is pretty striking. So and really beautiful. It's just a shot of Castle Grayskull, but it's really well done. So I'm very excited for this. So tell me, Eric, how do you feel about this Masters Universe show coming to Netflix?
Wow, I'm impressed. I'm impressed. I didn't know a lot about it. I think the only coverage I watched was some Midnight's Edge video a while back, where they were talking about some of the, you know, some of the issues bringing this show on the air in the first place. Because I believe Sony owns the rights right now, and there's been some backstage kind of antics. So this cast blows me away. This is a combination of some of the greatest from film, TV, and voice actors. You know what I mean? And I love that. That's amazing that they got this quality of a cast. And such a you know, because these are people that are kind of known for different things, you know, and you got some of the greatest from film, TV, and voice acting. I dig it. I really dig it. It's exciting.
Yeah, I'm very impressed. I wasn't expecting the cast to be, this is just an all-star assemblage of talent. It really is. I'm very, very excited. So tell us, Dr. Strange, are you familiar with Masters of the Universe at all?
Not particularly, but I have heard heard rumors of the so-called He-Man from a crossover of sorts. Some kind of alternate universe. However, hearing upon the cast, I definitely can't show this in Arkham because some might have flashbacks of Batman or Joker.
That makes sense. That would make sense. Very cool. All right. So that's going to be, this will be my main one. We're going to touch hopefully on my other main one I wanted to get to hopefully here a little later. So tell me, Erica, what do you have for pop culture news this episode?
I got two articles, and these are going to be pretty quick, but they're kind of fun and funny. Anyway, this is this is the comments from Harrison Ford. I don't know if you heard about this. I got a big kick out of this. So the title of this article starts out with a quote from Harrison Ford. Okay. Somebody had to be that guy and be a complete nerd. And listen, Harrison Ford's not a nerd, okay? He's not a nerd. He's not a geek. He's a straight-laced guy, okay? Yeah. Pretty much everybody knows that. But some geeky reporter had to ask him because they're idiots and they don't do any research. and they think Harrison Ford's in Star Wars, so he loves Star Wars, right? No, he doesn't. Okay. Right. So they asked him basically if Harrison Ford appearing in Rise of Skywalker, if that was a Force ghost. Stupidest question to ask Harrison Ford. This is so Harrison Ford. His answer was, I have no fucking idea what a Force ghost is. So, because he doesn't, he's not a fan, guys. And people have to understand this. Just because somebody is an actor in a beloved franchise, okay, doesn't mean they're into it. They're into the paycheck. They're into the acting, you know, they're into the performance. They're into, it's a job. It's a job to them. And I think people sometimes forget this, you know, and they obviously this reporter did, you know, because it's like, you know, Harrison Ford doesn't care about that stuff. You know what I mean? I've seen him on tons of interviews. You want to ask him something about behind the scenes, which actually this article does talk a little bit about that, about the process of getting him involved with Rise of Skywalker, because Harrison Ford was like, hey, I'm dead. I mean, he was even kind of like, why are you asking me back? I'm dead, because he doesn't really even get the Force ghost thing. And of course, I would say, by the way, he was not a Force ghost. He obviously was not a Force ghost. He was a projection that Leia was doing to reach out to Ben, and it killed her. You know what I mean? That's what that what that was. Yeah. She was using the image of Han Solo to reach out to him, to her son Ben. So the dumb question, but I just love Harrison Ford's response and the fact that, you know, do you guys do any research, these reporters and stuff like that? Because you know he doesn't know and he doesn't care. He just doesn't. He's not into Star Wars. Again, people need to understand that a lot of these actors are not fans. They're not. They're just not. They're fans of the paycheck. They're fans of having work. They like to work. Harrison Ford's working all the time. He's got a new movie coming out. That's why this question was asked, because he's doing press for the new movie he's about to come out with. I think it's called Call of the Wild. Call of the Wild is the one that's coming out. So he's doing the press tour, you know. But some nerd had to go and ask him this, you know, and I just think it's such a cool response by Harrison Ford, you know. It's like, I don't care. Right. I don't care, you know. Right. So.
I'm not surprised at his response. That totally fits. You know, and Harrison Ford's like, he's like a dude. He's not just like he like builds stuff. He's a helicopter pilot.
He's a pilot. You know what I mean? He's into like other stuff. He has a life. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Just saying. So, I'm not surprised at that response at all. do you have another story for pop culture?
Yes. This one's pretty quick. I just thought it was kind of funny in the context of you and I being such big Trekkies. And I don't know if you saw this, because it wasn't widely reported. This is who's this article from? This is actually from Space Force. This is actually from spaceforce.mil.
Wow.
Space Force has named their first senior enlisted advisor. And I put this out on Twitter and I said, hey, do you see any resemblance to Miles O'Brien, maybe? You know what I mean? Of course, the response I got was, he looks a lot more like Picard to me. But we have the beloved chief of Deep Space Nine and Star Trek The Next Generation, Miles O'Brien. This gentleman here, this is Chief Master Sergeant Roger A. Toberman. Toberman. I got that right. And it is appropriate for people that don't know, that's the highest enlisted rank in the Air Force. And it is customary to call them chief. So this is the first real Miles O'Brien. This is the senior enlisted advisor to Space Force.
Very interesting. You know, it was funny because we made the comment that, you know, judging with how, Starfleet's being portrayed, if I was to join anything right now, Space Force sounds like it might be more fun.
Well, from a fan perspective, I think it's kind of funny that, you know, there was all the comments and we talked about it, like the Space Force logo looking like Starfleet, but Space Force itself actually doesn't look like it's going to look like Starfleet. It looks like Stargate. Mm-hmm. If you understand the reference, because in Stargate it's Air Force officers, you know what I mean, running around on spaceships.
Yeah.
And that's what the real Space Force looks like it's going to be, even though obviously they're inspired by Starfleet with the logo, and there's going to be all sorts of that stuff's not going to stop. There's always been that relationship with the military and with NASA, with Star Trek, because a lot of these people are fans. They are fans, a lot of these people in the military. But the funny thing is, to me, from that fan perspective, is the real Starfleet might look more like Stargate than Star Trek in real life.
We'll see. even more reason for the MGM to figure out what they're doing with Stargate again.
They get some good press right now. They get some really good press right now, I bet. And I bet the Air Force would be Space Force would be all for it. You know what I mean? And be like, hey, yeah, let's get some Space Force stuff in there because we can get some good press on this, you know? So
that's an interesting partnership there in terms of like a sponsor. Would actually be Space Force. You know, Space Force as well as other branches of the military. That would be an interesting partner, you know, like because a lot of times they need, you know, advertising or sponsorship partner, you know, to work with. That would be a really interesting one to actually have the U.S. military, the Space Force, you know, kind of play a role. Anyhow, I don't know. It's my marketing brain going.
That's
to work
actually, I think that's actually would that's be really a
good matchup.
That would be an awesome matchup if they got a new Stargate out and Space Force was heavily involved in sponsoring it, you know, and all that stuff. That would be pretty cool.
Yeah,
that would be really cool.
So tell us, Dr. Strange, do you know much about the Space Force?
I know it's I don't even know anything about it, to be honest. I haven't been paying much attention. I just know it exists, and I thought it was a joke.
Oh,
now it exists.
It's a thing. Exist. It's a thing.
Do they have lasers? Do they have spaceships?
They have a space shuttle. I know that. The Air Force has been operating a space. They're the only people operating a space shuttle right now, as far as I know. It's not manned. It's an unmanned shuttle. But I know they have that. They have at least two of them, if not more. It's very secretive, actually. So, but they do have that.
Oh, okay. Sounds more like Checkmate and such.
yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So
may there not be a Brainiac in your world.
Oh, yeah. So let's. I have it pulled up. If you'll share my screen. So this will be my last pop culture news item. We have to talk about this. So I'm going to let it run with the volume off. I think most people have probably seen this by now. This is the Robert Pattinson tease for the Batman. This is the Matt Reeves film. It actually has some musical score in it by Michael Giacchino. I'm going to pause it here for just a second. I want to acknowledge this. I don't want to dwell on it too much because we have a lot to get to in this episode still to come here. So there's a lot of interesting theories going around that the bat symbol on Robert Pattinson's bat suit might actually be composed of pieces of the gun that was used to actually murder his parents. Have you guys heard any of that?
No, I didn't hear that at all. Wow, that's kind of crazy.
Before even hearing about that, that's what I thought. I mean, think about it. I mean, he's going to want to showcase. I mean, that's what made Batman was the murder of his parents, and he wants to strike fear into the criminals. In kind of a way, him having that on his chest, showing that he overcame his own fear to strike fear to everyone else.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea. We'll have to see. Obviously, as the movie unfolds, how that actually plays out. But I thought it was an interesting theory that would be worth bringing up. Now, along the same lines, too, it could just be some sort of an interesting batarang apparatus that's built into the suit as well. Or it could just be ornamentation. But I thought it was an interesting fan theory that people are speculating that this bat symbol might actually be the actual gun that was used to kill his parents.
Well,
something else that you... As we're going to let this run, something else you can't really hear, and I do recommend it. If you haven't seen this clip, go out on YouTube, do a search for the Batman. Just start typing Robert, and it'll automatically come up, and then you can watch it. Speaking of batarangs. So tell us, Dr. Strange, do you have that because of your work with the Batman? Like, was that part of like something that the Gotham City Police Department that they turned in as you're working with his, you know, some of his arch enemies and trying to rehabilitate them? Do you use that in treatment?
Sure, let's say that.
Okay. Right, so we're going to let this continue to run here. But the Michael Giacchino score they have going with this, it's actually really interesting, and it reemphasizes the idea that's been coming out that this is going to be very much a mystery story, that this will be a detective story for Batman, which I thought was really interesting. And it's interesting, too, that this suit is very heavily inspired by the Arkham video games. And not the Lee Barrymore, I'm not sure how to pronounce his name, suit from Noel that a lot of people were putting forth as a fan theory. There's a lot of people saying that, oh, that's what the suit's going to look like. And they're just going on and on and on about it. And it turns out, no, it's much more influenced by the outfit, the version of the costume that he wears actually in Arkham.
And now you're going to get a lot of people hating the Batman movie because this is what they thought it was going to be, and it's not going to be what they thought it was going to be. Kind of like Star Wars.
Right. So I just wanted to bring that up, talk about just briefly. So tell me, Eric, how do you feel about the reveal of the new bat suit from the Batman?
Well, you know, I thought it was interesting. I did see this when it was like trending on Twitter and everything like that. So I saw it pretty much when it came out. So I was working, I think I was actually working on some of our videos and things on YouTube. And as I do, I have Twitter in the background. And I think I actually got to see the video almost as it came out. And it's interesting to see people's reactions to it. Like, I don't really have a big reaction to it right now because it's like a tease of a tease. You know what I mean? It's so little. It's cool. I think it's cool that Matt Reeves posted that. I think that's awesome. But yeah, it doesn't show a whole lot. A lot of people that were kind of dismissive of it were saying, hey, so are we getting like a new season of Daredevil? Is that what this is? Because it does kind of remind you of the Daredevil look from the Netflix series, you know, with the red and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's just the red.
So, and we don't get to actually see his what the ears look like yet, which is always, to me, actually, that's one of the things I nitpick the most, is sometimes I'm like, the ears are not right, you know what I mean? So we'll see how the whole thing looks. I want to see that big, nice, you know, professionally done picture, you know, that I can just stare at and analyze and all that kind of stuff. So I don't know what his belt looks like, you know.
Well, I can't say when I played that in the movie room at Arkham Asylum, all the patients screamed, so he does look like Batman.
There you go. That's a pretty big endorsement right there.
The patients at Arkham screamed, and it's eliciting the correct response.
Correct. Yeah, absolutely. Batman is
concerned, so.
Absolutely.
Interesting. So do we have anything else for pop culture? Or are we ready to move on to streaming wars?
No, I think we're good to go to streaming wars.
Okay, cool. All right. So in this segment, we talk about obviously the streaming wars, various things that are going on, you know, in the world of like Disney Plus or Netflix. In a weird way, the He-Man announcement, Master Universe announcement I made earlier in the pop culture news segment actually kind of plays into the streaming wars. That's another salvo for people that are into genre entertainment and geek culture. That obviously benefits Netflix. You know, having Kevin Smith and that incredible cast, that's a big pull. That's a big lure for those of us that grew up with Master Universe, such as myself, to continue my subscription. Because as everyone knows, I bring up every episode, I'm always looking for any reason in the world to cancel Netflix. However, I never do it, because they always have something interesting going on there. So good job, Netflix. You still have my money, and now you've got my curiosity with the Masters Universe revelation. So tell me, Eric, do you have anything interesting for this episode's installment of The Streaming Wars?
I do. I have two articles, and I'm going to start here because we've talked about this before. This is a Verge article, and it's talking about YouTube's role in the streaming wars, which you don't get a lot of coverage of YouTube's role in the streaming wars because everyone's focused on Netflix, Disney Plus, HBO Max, Peacock. And so a lot of times YouTube ends up being kind of like under the radar. But to me, YouTube is very important, and they are a big front on, you know, in the streaming wars. And this Verge article, which is a little bit older, this is dated February 13th, it says YouTube is the front runner in the mobile streaming wars, and it's not even close. It's not even close. It says, here's a fun number to think about in 2019. YouTube dominated 70% of the total time people spent on their phones watching the top five entertainment apps. It's also the only one of those apps measured among Android phones, which dominates 75% of phone usage worldwide, that isn't specific to China, an area where Google doesn't even operate. The data from App Annie's latest report shows just how far ahead YouTube is on the mobile front, where more people are spending their time, especially teenagers and young adults. It's something that companies like Netflix, WarnerMedia, NBC Universal, and Disney will have to take into account as they compete not only for the best content, but for people's attention. And I think that's pretty striking, the number, how YouTube is dominating when it comes to watching something on your phone. Because a lot, like they said, a lot of younger people, that's how they watch their media. You know, they watch
on
their
phone,
which I don't understand because I like to watch it on my TV. I use my PlayStation 4 for most of my streaming, even YouTube a lot. The only thing I don't like on using my PlayStation 4 for streaming or streaming like a YouTube is because you can't comment with the PlayStation 4 app. Like, so I have to break out my computer or my phone if I want to make comments on YouTube videos. But, it's interesting to me that YouTube is such a dominant player. And you just have to remember that YouTube is mostly, you know, creator owned content. You know, it's content from the masses, and the fact that they have such an edge over these other services that are spending billions of dollars. Netflix is going in billions of dollars in debt trying to create more content, and YouTube has this gold mine of people that are basically just like you and me, Dave. And
YouTube creating content for free.
Right. But that amount of market share is amazing.
It's interesting.
Most of the people that watch it have short attention spans. The lengths of the videos are about 2 to 3 minutes, and they do have all the funny cat videos.
Do you enjoy the funny cat videos, Dr. Strange?
Yes, I do.
Well, I'll say when it comes to like young people, because I didn't even talk about children, but my kids, they love watching programs on YouTube. And most of the programs that they watch have to do with things like unboxings and even just families going to like Disneyland or stuff like that. They eat it up. They love that stuff. They love it. They're looking for that stuff more than any other kind of content.
That's rather peculiar. It's like I've noticed that with the younger generation as well, that they would rather watch people play video games than play video games themselves.
Correct.
Which I think is on the verge of idiocy.
Well, it's absolutely the way it is. That's absolutely true because, you know, I have a pretty substantial video game collection. In fact, I'd actually like to talk about video games more on this program. But because we are on Twitch. We're on Twitch right now. You know what I mean? And I would like to try to reach out to that audience more. And the thing is, I get games from my kids all the time. And they'll play them for a little bit. But they spend more time, just like what you said, they spend more time actually watching YouTube videos of other people playing games than actually playing games. It's crazy.
Well,
it's crazy.
It makes sense on the point of that people are trying to get better and looking for different strategies and everything like that. But a lot of people are watching it just for the certain streamer, like that guy that I had no idea who it was until they just started shoving his name in my face from every avenue. Ninja. I didn't know who he was. It's like, who is this? And then all of a sudden, oh, he's a streamer from Twitch. I'm like, why do I care?
You know, what's amazing to me too, with Twitch is, you know, I've tried to go on there to just look at content and what's popular, like what's recommended. And I'll watch and I'm like, why does anybody like this? You know what I mean? And this guy's got like, you know, thousands of views and I'm just kind of sitting there like, I don't get it. You know? So I got to figure it out. That's something you and I have to figure out too, Dave, is the best Twitch angle. You know what I mean? Because it's, if you go on Twitch and you watch some of those videos, you're going to be kind of scratching your head, I think. You know, like, why are people into this? There's an audience. That's my point.
Well, I'm not the best person to ask because I'm very old-fashioned and I don't get what these younglings are doing. Wait, I probably should say younglings. Anakin may be hiding somewhere.
Yeah. That's true.
And but it's also funny. There's people that are killing it on YouTube right now, and even with game content, that can't break into Twitch. Their Twitch channels are like nothing. Like they have... for instance, Metal Jesus, he's somebody who does a lot of reviews of games, a lot of new games, mostly older games, very retro type of stuff. Mm-hmm. And his Twitch account is like a couple hundred people or something like that. And he's got like hundreds of thousands of subscribers on YouTube. So there's something weird about that, too. Hmm. You know, there's something interesting about that, too.
Different age demographics, more than likely.
Yeah, that's good. I was just about to say the same thing, Dr. Strange. More than likely, that's probably what it is. It's the age of the different demographics on the various platforms. And there is sometimes some duplication, you know, when you follow someone on a bunch of different platforms or too many or a couple of platforms go, I don't need to know what this person's doing over here. I'm fine following them on this. I'm not going to also follow them on this. That just seems a bit extreme. Although much of the world today is about extremes, so there you go. No, I don't know.
I see it with Twitter too, because I usually try to, because actually I can get much more engagement on Twitter with the content creator than I can on YouTube. The reason for that is the YouTube, they might have like 100,000 subscribers. Their Twitter is like a couple thousand, you know what I mean? Right. Followers, and that's it. So they're much more accessible on Twitter than they are on YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. We're trying some different things here on the show, and we're going to continue to experiment with the format and the different ways that the show hopefully reaches out to people, hopefully connects with people, and, you know, brings people, you know, kind of into the fold, hopefully to talk about these topics that we talk about, such as the streaming wars and pop culture news and our later topic here. So, you know. Who knows? Other than I think Dr. Strange is right. I think age demographics on the various platforms does play a big factor, because it would make sense that an older viewer would be more interested to watch some of the retro game stuff. But then there are some, you know, segments of the younger, you know, the kids that enjoy the retro gaming too. So
my kids like old games, yeah.
So it might even be like a generational, at some point, switch, you know, and the platforms might even flip a little bit over time. So I'd be curious to see kind of how it all bears out. So
yeah, me too. Absolutely.
So you said you had another article for Streaming Wars?
I have one more. And this is really interesting. This is something that I came across. I hadn't heard it anywhere else. And this is really interesting to me. So AT&T, of course, owns Time Warner. So they're going to be relevant when it comes to HBO Max. And this says AT&T's secret streaming weapon could be Star Wars. This is a SeekingAlpha.com article. It's dated February 18th, so it's pretty recent. Here's a summary of the article for you. HBO Max may have greater rights to the Star Wars library than we all realized when initially assessing it. AT&T has apparently retained the rights it acquired from Disney for Star Wars' first 11 movies for TV and companion online on-demand rights. Such rights would presumably be transferable to the new HBO Max, though it might require integrating a live stream of Turner Networks. Star Wars could conceivably be some of the most efficient content on the new service on a dollar per viewer basis. The AT&T Disney deal required a minimum number of ad breaks, so AT&T would have to run ads even for ad-free Max subscribers, but it could be a major advantage in the streaming wars. Had you heard about this, Dave?
No, this is crazy, because the whole thing with Disney Plus was that they were getting their content back. So it's still crazy to me that there's still, you know, because we've talked about this before, you know, that even some of these streaming services have paid these huge dollar amounts for things like Friends and stuff because of these old contracts that are still floating around.
Right.
At any point, you know, it may show up on another service. It may leave the service that you subscribed, you know, specifically for that and go somewhere else. A good example of this, which I brought up before, I keep telling people, if you haven't seen Justified, if you have Hulu, now is your chance. Justified is the first several seasons of Justified. I love that show. Highly, highly recommend Justified. Justified, as I told you, I was rewatching it for the third time on Amazon Prime. And then all of a sudden, one day I go to log in and I have to pay to watch an episode. I'm like, well, that sucks. And then I go over to Hulu to find something else to watch. And lo and behold, guess what's on Hulu to watch actually right now as a part of that service? Justified. Justified is now on Hulu.
So just don't drink the apple pie.
No, you're correct, Dr. Strange. No one should drink the apple pie. That is a deep dive Justified reference. We have a fellow Rayleigh Givens. Well, I don't know if you're a fan of Rayleigh Givens, Doctor. Definitely do not drink the apple pie. That is a all-time comment. I hadn't heard this, but I'm not too surprised. But I am shocked that it's Star Wars. That is one of Disney Plus's major selling points, is that they actually, I think, just recently got, there's a couple of things they actually just recently got on Disney Plus they didn't have at launch that was Star Wars. I don't know. This is crazy to me. This is crazy. I look at CBS All Access too. You can watch Star Wars on Amazon Prime. You can watch it on Netflix still, you know, but they're touting it as being on CBS All Access. And it's funny because I've actually been watching, when I watch Star Trek right now, I've actually been watching it on Netflix because I'm having issues with CBS All Access. Whenever it tries to go to a commercial break on original series and next gen episodes or Enterprise or whatever, it like hangs up and crashes the system.
Yeah.
I don't know what is, and then I tried to send a query. Look at me complaining about my streaming service on a live show. I tried to send my query actually to CBS and it didn't work. It failed through my television. Wow. So I'm going to have to log in on a browser and be like, yo, can you fix your thing? Cause it don't work. But I've actually been watching Star Trek, even though I pay for CBS All Access, actually on Netflix. It's another reason I haven't got rid of Netflix yet.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy.
Crazy having Star Wars on there. There's one thing that kind of struck me as strange. On the CW app, you can actually watch Blade, the TV series.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. That's interesting.
Yeah. I was curious where Blade was, because that television show, it's like you can't find it anywhere. I was curious. So I guess it's on CW. That's interesting.
That is interesting. That's weird.
CW Seed.
CW. Oh, a Seed, no less. Huh. Interesting.
Yeah. So one of the things before I even found out about this article, but it was going through my head, is I don't have cable, but my parents do. My mom still has cable. And there are other places I go where they have cable and I've had access to cable. And fairly recently, I think it was actually at the gym, I noticed that they were playing, you know, one of the Star Wars movies. This was like right before Rise of Skywalker came on. They were playing it on TNT. And I was thinking about that, you know, as I just casually was like, that's kind of interesting that, you know, Warner, because I know Warner Brothers owns TNT, has apparently these broadcast rights to Star Wars. And it's kind of interesting that those rights are what we're talking about here, that they could use this sort of as a backdoor to get it on their streaming platforms. And that would be a really good move by Warner Brothers if they did that. So we'll have to see if they take advantage of this or not.
It'd be interesting.
As long as I still get to see Mandalorian season 2.
Yes. Right. Right.
That's the priority. Mandalorian season 2. I agree, Dr. Strange. That for me is also a priority.
We want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Retro Rogues Live podcast. You can learn more about Eric Alexander and Find the Live Show on either Twitch, YouTube, or Twitter by searching for BassGod14, that's BASSGOD14, on either YouTube, Twitch, or Twitter. If you are curious about co-host Dave Beatty, you can see some of his art, find social media links, and so much more at his website, DaveBeatty.com. That's DaveBeatty.com. If you enjoyed this episode of the Retro Rogues Live, be sure to like, share, and subscribe.